Jerry Herman, the composer lyricist of MAME, came up with his opening number for the musical by going back in his memory to a time when he was in grade school. He came home and his mother was involved in doing another one of her many parties that she did. And he was thinking, well, it's October and it's a Tuesday and I can't figure out what holiday it is. And he said to her, Mom, what's the occasion? And she said, it's today.
Light the candles, get the ice out, roll the rug up, it's today. Though it may not be anyone's birthday, and though it's far from the first of the year, I know that this very minute has history in it. We're here.
It's the time for making merry, and so I'm for making hay.
So don't depend on a holiday date. If you need New Year's to bubble, then order a double and wait.
There's a thank you you can give life if you live life all the way.
Sound like Broadway, don't they? My gosh, what a great opening. Thank you, guys. MAME began as a novel by a man named Edward Tanner, who went by the pseudonym Patrick Dennis. Mr. Tanner had an aunt that he based MAME on. Her name was Marion Tanner, and she lived at 72 Bank Street in the West Village, and she passed away in 1985 in a nursing home on Hudson Street. Like MAME, she often took in a lot of different types of people that society didn't really look kindly upon. Artists, bohemians, writers, and what they used to call free thinkers. And she always had homeless children she found on the street, she'd bring them home. For her whole life, she always did that. She received her master's in sociology from NYU. And among her many, many jobs were sales clerk at Macy's. You ever saw the play, you know how that turned out. She was a performer on Broadway. She actually did the revival of Knickerbocker Holiday. She was an arbitrator for the National Labor Relations Board. And another thing she got paid for, she was the professional ice hockey coach. She really was a Renaissance woman in so many ways. She and her nephew had a falling out after she refused to stop letting grifters, homeless people, and alcoholics into her home and giving them money that he gave her for household expenses. She just couldn't help but give it away. In 1964, she couldn't afford her mortgage payments anymore. She drifted around for a while, and she ended up in that nursing home. The sheriff who escorted her out of her house told a reporter at the time, "She's an amazing woman. There's no place left in our society for a person like her. In an earlier time, she might have been called a saint." Who here has never read the book or seen the movie or the musical? Put your hand up. Oh, wow, okay. There are a few of you who are unfamiliar with this wonderful story. So just I'm going to briefly share what the story is to bring you up to speed here. A young boy named Patrick arrives in New York with his nanny Agnes from the Midwest. Patrick has just lost his father, and his Auntie Mame is the only living relative. They arrive at her home, where there's a party going on in full swing, and they find not an elderly homebody, but a beautiful, vibrant, joyful woman who embraces all of life that she can every moment of every day. Mame has been given custody of Patrick by her late brother, but he has appointed a bank trustee to have final say about his education. Mr. Babcock, the bank trustee, sends Patrick away to boarding school, but not before Patrick experiences all the best of life that Auntie Mame can show him. When Patrick grows up, he has become a well-rounded young man with Mame as his life guide, but he falls in love with a woman from a very snobbish, wealthy family with definite notions as to who are the right people and who aren't. Of course, Mame finds a way to repulse this family by setting up a home for pregnant single women right next door to their house. Finally, Patrick sees them for the bigots that they are, and he comes to see Mame for the wise and unique and terrific woman that she truly is. What makes any story one that has longevity is the underlying spiritual truths that it has. A story cannot survive and keep going on unless there is a truth that every generation can respond to or recognize in some way. As I shared last week, our stories are not only barometers for who we are as a culture, but it also reveals what we hold to be true spiritually. From the original novel, to the play, to the movie, to the musical, it has so many different incarnations there. Mame represents the powerful archetype of the divine feminine energy of God. From the beginning of recorded history, the divine feminine has been problematic, to put it mildly, for the patriarchal leaders of our planet. Just as Mame was always a thorn in the side of the bank trustee. What do the Bible women Eve, Delilah, Jezebel, Job's wife, and Mary Magdalene have in common? They were all reviled or misunderstood by the male Bible writers because of their independence and because of their power. Pope Gregory decided, after reading through the New Testament one day, that all the women named Mary, or seemed to be named Mary, were all the same Marys, all the same woman under Mary Magdalene. He combined them all together and determined that this Mary Magdalene was the woman taken in adultery that Jesus forgave. So he said, oh, okay, Mary Magdalene, because she comes from an urban center, is a hooker. It's like saying that because you live in the Upper West Side, you have loose morals. Now, whether that's true or not is up to you, but you know. This is a determination by Pope Gregory that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute, and she was not. She was not. Any woman who is independent and shares the good news of your unique, joyful, beautiful, vibrantly alive, divinely perfect self, rather than the belief that you're a sinner meant to live in guilt, obedience, and abject terror of a vengeful, mentally deficient, white, elderly male God, is dangerous to the power of the orthodoxy. Mary, the Blessed Mother, according to the Catholic Church, is worshipped because the Vatican has declared her that she has never had sex, and she remained the virgin her whole life, even though Jesus had brothers. Well, we know they didn't come from a virgin birth. But they said, no, they must be talking of brothers and sisters somehow other than maybe they were adopted because she didn't have sex. They were adopted, or there's just quote-unquote, they were brothers and sisters. No, Jesus actually, we know the name of one of them. James was the brother of Jesus. So we know that Mary, the Blessed Virgin Mother, had a family. But we have a hard time, or we used to have a hard time, the church used to have a really hard time, even conceiving that we are human beings who have all these wonderful and natural urges. So the women in the Bible that we just talked about represent the loving, intuitive nature of God, the birthing process of creativity over and over again in our lives. So metaphysically in this story, MAME is the divine intuition within you that knows that life is meant to be a joyful adventure, that you're meant to give birth over and over again in your own life to the creative, wonderful impulse that God is always calling us to do. As she tells Agnes, life is a banquet and most poor SOBs are starving to death. What are you starving for in your life? What are you putting off that you're not accepting? Now, Mael, her young nephew, represents a new idea, a new thought of good, a fresh dream of success that you have. You're giving birth to Patrick within you. When the intuitive understanding of God is leading you to your success, rather than Mr. Babcock the banker, who represents a worldly belief that you have to work hard to earn your way, that you have to follow the rules of the orthodoxy or you're not quite right, that you have to live by the fear of lack and not the joy of discovery, when you live your life by what gives you joy and great satisfaction, you're going to discover that life has become the wonderful and satisfying adventure it was always meant to be. This is the teaching of the most powerful spiritual greats of all time. Unity Minister Edwin Gaines, who's been here a number of times, shares that she took a spiritual pilgrimage to the Himalayas one day to meet a great Hindu teacher. After days of traveling to him, and you know how hard it is to get to the Himalayas, she finally got an audience with him and got to ask him, what is the secret to life? He looked deep into her eyes and said with a big smile, the secret of life is this. Be happy. And Edwin said, I traveled all the way here for that. For a Hallmark card. And I was about to wipe the smile off that sucker's face. But she thought about it, she meditated on it, and realized that this truly is the greatest truth she could ever receive. And you heard it here today without having to go to India. Now you can go to India if you want, but this is the truth about your life. Choose happy. Choose joy. It's up to you to choose the life that you're going to have. You're that powerful. And we choose it by our words, by our actions, by what we're thinking, by what we're feeling all the time. For me, this truth was brought to light years ago by the scripture reading that we heard from Kathleen just a few minutes ago. According to the book of John, this is the first miracle of our great teacher and brother. As we heard, Jesus and his 12 friends were at the wedding, and he was approached by his mother during the reception. She said, they just ran out of wine. Son, meaning, what are you going to do about it? Now, I've always found that to be really weird. What was he going to do? Run out to Trader Joe's? There were no corner package stores back then. They ran out of wine. Jesus' response was, and she said, what are you going to do? He said, I don't know what I'm going to do yet because God hasn't revealed it. When the time's right, I'll deal with it, Mother. That's what he was saying there. It's nice to know that the greatest spiritual teacher of all time had a little bit of a hissy fit with his own mother. So you can feel good about this, okay? Well, she kept staring at him, and obviously the time was right. Because he said, okay, he got up, and he told the servants to bring the water jugs to him. And as they were pouring it out, it was wine. And it was the best wine that they had that day so far. This is a really, really significant story. The very first miracle performed by the greatest teacher and mystic ever was turning water into wine. Why? So people could party. Do you understand that? Do you really fully comprehend? When I got that, I was in ministerial school, when I got that, I went, oh my God! Jesus is the party animal. It was life-changing. I went to a bar. I got some wine in honor of this wonderful teaching. How cool is he? Jesus loves me, this I know. I think I'll have Merlot. The power of God was manifested for one reason, and one reason only on that wedding day, so joyful celebration could continue. That's all. He didn't say, I've made you Chardonnay, get down on your knees and worship me. They may have done that because of the Chardonnay, but that was not the point of it. He brought forth this wonderful celebration just so people could be happy. They were rejoicing and they were really glad. Jesus always chose to hang out with the most interesting people, didn't he? Sinners. Woo-hoo. Tax collectors. Prostitutes, lepers, the downtrodden, those society reviled and hated. They were so interesting. The gay centurion whose boyfriend's servant was sick, and he came up and he said, my servant, my boy, in the original Koine Greek, is sick. And he said, I'll come. And the disciples, their jaws fell to the ground. They're talking, first of all, to a Roman. And if someone has a boyfriend at that, oh my God, what is Jesus doing? And the guy said, no, you don't have to come with me, just say the word. I know, you say, whatever you say goes. And Jesus said, I've never seen such faith as this. Go your way, your boy is well. There was no judgment, no condemnation. All those people that Mame, the original Marion Tanner, loved, celebrated, and supported were the same people Jesus hung out with. The message of love and acceptance our elder brother came to share with us happens first within our hearts as we love and recognize God and each other. Because the scripture says, if you don't love your brother or sister, you have no love for God. Don't pretend to love God and hate everybody else. We have to turn within and find God and then see that mirrored in front of each and every one of us. I live in New York too. I know it's hard. It's really hard sometimes to do this. But that's what we are called to do as truth students. When the Mr. Babcocks of the world begin telling us how awful it is, how awful we are, we need to remember that our divine intuition is calling us to find our joy today, regardless of the negative Nellies who are telling us that we're wrong and they despise how happy we are. Every day should have a little Christmas in it. We should wake up every morning feeling that wonderful Christ energy of joy, love, and peace, and happiness. Oh, just so you know, there are 58 days left till Christmas. Oh.
All I
valley. Put up the tree before my spirit falls again. Fill up the stockings. I may be rushing things, but deck the halls again now. For we need a little Christmas right this very minute. Candles in the window, carols at the spirit. Yes, we need a little Christmas right this very minute.
It hasn't snowed a single flurry,
but Santa dear, we're in a hurry. So climb up the chimney,
turn off the brightest string of lights I've ever seen.
Slice up the fruitcake.
It's time we hung some tinsel on that evergreen vine.
Grown a little sadder, grown a little older, and I need a little angel sitting on my shoulder.
It need a little Christmas now, for I need a little music.
La 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 la.
Need a little laughter.
Ha 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 ha.
Need a little singing.
Sing, 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 sing,
sing. Singing through the rafter and the
need a little snapping, happy ever after.
Need a little Christmas now.
While working on this message, I went to the Bible Concordance, which has every single word in the Bible and tells you how many times it's in there. The word "the" is in there like 3 million times, and they'll tell you where you can find or an. Every word is listed in what order. I went to the word joy, and there are over 200 references to joy, and for sorrow, there was under 100. So we know where the focus of the Bible writers were. It's about taking the joy that God is and letting it flow forth. And I think Jesus really was the one who really encapsulated that, really got down to the point of what joy is. Here's a few of the things that the great teacher said about that. He said, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field which a man found and covered up. And then in his joy, he goes and he sells all he has and he buys that field. He also said, rejoice and leap for joy. Leap. Get that feeling and then let it move through the body. Leap, jump, have a good time, and know that your reward is great within you. He said, I came that you may have joy and joy abundantly. So abundance is part of that joy, part of what you're here to experience. And I think one of my all-time favorites, until now, you have not asked anything in my name or in my nature in the way that I do it. He said, ask that you will receive, so what? So that your joy may be complete. Ask. We don't ask. We assume that God should just give us whatever it is, but we don't ask. We're not clear within ourselves what that joy might be. So how do we find it? How do we experience that joy? How do we bring that into our lives? If the secret of life is to be happy, what do I need to do to be happy? Well, Mame showed the world that it was about creating exactly the kind of life that you want to have. She just went out and did it. She gave parties. She surrounded herself with these fascinating people. She tried different career paths. She traveled the world to see who was spinning on this planet along with her. What is God within you nudging you, pushing you to do? In our main textbook, Lessons in Truth, Emily Cady says, God is always tapping on the door of your subconscious, always pushing you forward. So that dream you keep pushing away keeps coming back up because it's a God dream. You cannot push a God idea away for forever. You can push it down for a while, and some people do keep it down for a lifetime, but we know what kind of joy these people have. We know they're not enjoying their lives because they're not doing what God has for them. So what dream do you still long for? What dream keeps coming up over and over again for you? That when on those rare occasions you really feel sometimes it's too painful to even revisit because it hasn't worked for you yet. And yet is the operative word here. If God has it for you, then it has every possibility of coming forth if you allow it, if you agree with it, if you let the joy bring it forth. I want you to close your eyes for a moment, and I want you to let love and intuition within you reveal what this dream is. Don't be afraid of it. Just let God reveal it. Breathe into your heart. Relax. And from your heart, let the picture of this divine good be revealed to your mind's eye. Just be with it for a moment. Breathe into it. What picture are you getting? Is it a career in the arts that you threw away a long time ago or said this is not possible? Could it be a new home? A home in a place that would be wonderful for you by the water, in the mountains, in the desert, wherever your heart is leading you? Could it be for a mate who loves you completely, 110% for who you are, the wonderful, joyful, loving child of God you are? Is it to be finally free of the pain in your body or free from anxiety or fear or addictions? What would you feel if you knew this was possible? What would you do differently today if you knew you could not fail? How different would life be if you allowed God within you to reveal exactly what you need to do for this to transpire? How joyful will you feel when this happens? I'm going to repeat this. How joyful are you going to feel in a day, in a week, in a month, in a year, when this comes forth into perfect manifestation for you because you've allowed God now, you've given permission to God for this to happen? Hold this picture in your mind and heart joyfully. Feel the joy welling up within you, moving through your body, moving into your mind, moving into every part of you, every breath. This is a God idea. God knows how to do this through you, so let go and let God do this. So affirm with me, this is God's dream for me together. This is God's dream for me. I joyfully and gratefully accept it. I joyfully and gratefully accept it. God is revealing how it is coming to me. God is revealing how it's coming to me. I let go of wanting to control it. I let go of wanting to control it. I let go and let God do it through me. I let go and let God do it through me. And so it is. And so it is. And so it is. Open your eyes. Take a breath. You are different people right now. You are more fuller. You are fuller. You are more of who you are. The joy has come up. I can see it. I can feel this wonderful energy. Because even for this moment, you have agreed to let go, let God do the work. You're joyful, you're grateful right now. You don't know how it's coming forth. Give up knowing how. You will not know until God wants you to know. Breathe into your heart. So, along with this idea, now that you were celebrating, and I could see your smile, some people are in tears, and now I know what the thought is. Are you kidding me? Really? You're never going to have that jewelry business in New York City. You're never going to sing at the Met. That's a dream. Forget about it. Who would want this as a mate with the way I look right now? You know, you're just kidding yourself about fill in the blank. We affirm, we know it, and then we look at the planet and it begins to fall apart because we're looking outside of ourselves. Vera, Mame's friend, represents those anxieties that pop up in our lives when we are looking to keep ourselves centered and optimistic. Vera comes along and tells us, like the good friend she is, just who do you think you are?
Oh, thank you, darling. You too. You too.
You know, friendship like ours is very rare. When I think of all of the same men that we've dated, and we've still remained inseparable.
Oh, Mame, we never dated any of the same men.
Oh, what about Carlos, that sexy Argentinian with all the shoulders.
Carlos? I never dated Carlos. I married him. I never dated him.
The wonderful thing about you and me, Vera, is that we can say anything to each other.
Absolutely anything. Just be careful what you say.
We'll always be bosom buddies, friends, sisters, and pals. We'll always be bosom buddies. If life should reject you, I'm here to protect you.
If I say that your tongue is vicious,
if I call you uncouth, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will sit down and tell you the truth?
Though now and again I'm aware that my candid opinion might sting,
and often my frank observation may scald. I've been meaning to tell you for years, you should keep your hair natural like mine.
If I kept my hair natural like yours, I'd be bald.
But, darling, we'll always be dear companions.
My crony!
My mate!
We'll always be harmonizing.
Orphan Annie and Sandy.
Like Amos and Andy.
If I say that your sense of style's as far off as your youth, it's simply that. Who else but a bosom buddy will tell you the whole stinking truth?
Each time that a critic is written, your voice is the voice of a frog. Straight to your side to defend you, I rush. You know that I'm there every time that the world makes an unkind remark when they say Vera Charles is the world's greatest lush. It hurts me.
And if I say your fangs are showing mane, pull in your claws, it's simply that. Who else could I bosom somebody will tell you the obvious flaws?
I feel it's my duty to tell you, it's time you adjust to your age. You try to be peg of my heart when you're Lady Macbeth. Exactly how old are you, Vera? The truth.
How old do you think?
Oh, I'd say somewhere between 40 and death.
But, darling,
I'll always be Alice Toklas, and you'll be Gertrude Stein. I've dissed you, I've gossiped and gloated, but I'm so devoted.
And if I say that love and sex made you into a star, remember that. Who else but a bosom buddy will tell you how rotten you are? Just turn to your bosom buddy for aid and affection, for help and direction, for loyalty, love, and for suit. Remember that. Who else but a bosom buddy will sit down and tell you and give you the devil will sit down and tell you the truth.
The best thing we can do when these little demons or gremlins natter on that you can't have your dream is to laugh at it. You laugh at those little thoughts that come up because they come from a four-year-old brat inside of you. It doesn't come from God. So these two, Vera and Mame, represent feelings that are fighting each other. Your job is to figure out which one is the right one for you. Which one is yours? And then go forth. There's an African tribe that holds the teaching, when your demons come up, make friends with them. How do you do that? You take a look and you divinely detach from it for a second, and you listen to it. Think, what is being said here? What's going on here? And then ask yourself, where did that thought come from? Whose voice is that? Is it somebody from school? Was it something I heard on television when I was 5? Was it one of my parents who said it's a good thing that you're smart because you're not very pretty? Who gave you these lies? Where do they come from? They have no power over you unless we decide to give them our divine power. Remember, Vera in you is just a pop quiz. You're asking yourself, do I believe this dream is real? Do I believe this comes from God? It is not God, it's not the universe, it's you doing the asking. It's you bringing forth the lesson. You're the little gremlin, testing yourself. You ever say to yourself, I'm never going to do this kind of work again? And a week later you get a call offering you a lot of money for doing that work. I guess God doesn't want me to have this. Well, it has nothing to do with God. It has something to do with you saying, I'm never going to do this again, then you go do it. How many times as a waiter, as an actor, a performer, or an artist, you say, I'm not going to wait tables again. I don't like it. It's soul depleting for me. Would you come do some catering? Okay. And then you beat yourself up for doing it. You hold to your truth and you say, this is what my life is, this is who I am now. The offers may still come, but you say, thank you, that is not me anymore, but bless you for asking. And then you go do what you're here to do. Now, sometimes you just may hear, you know what, rent is due, so I'm going to go do this, but I'm going to continue to hold to the truth that I am a well-paid professional artist. I am a well-paid professional artist, and I make my living at what I love to do. This is your life. This is the way what you came to the planet to do. Then it's up to you to call forth the power of divine joy and move confidently in the direction of your good. Years ago, Lucille Ball was teaching a workshop at an LA acting school. And an actor wanted to know, what do you do when you're tired and out of it? Maybe you've had a bad night and the next day on I Love Lucy, you've got to be up and full of joy and excitement. She responded, there were many mornings. The last thing she wanted to do was be Lucy. She said that when she walked on the set, though, with the other actors, something would begin to happen. And she called it the enchanted sense of play. Lucille would feel the joy begin to kick in with everybody coming together. And then she would start bouncing around and running around the set like Lucy. What do you need to do in your own life to get that joy cranked up? What do you need to know and remember about what you're here to do? I had you do that a few moments ago in meditation. You pictured the good, you added joy and gratitude, and you felt it, didn't you? Even just for a little bit, you felt that joy come forth. Light the candles, get the ice out, tune the grand up, pull the stops out. It's today. Today is the day to do it. Tomorrow, no, because tomorrow's not here. Today, right at this very moment, is when you accept your good. Now is the fullness of God right here, right now. In the Talmud, which is the commentaries of the ancient Jewish scriptures, it's written, when a man faces his maker, he will have to account for the pleasures in life he failed to experience. God's going to say, according to this, so why did you ignore that hot person who wanted to go on a date with you? Why did you turn down that party? Why did you not join your friends at the beach that day? We're here to live, experience, joy, celebrate every single moment of every day. So that which was revealed to your mind and heart is what God has waiting for you to accept. That was a God picture. You didn't make it up. It came from Spirit within you. And the way to attract this good like a magnet to you is, number one, as we said, feel the joy of God moving through you to celebrate this wonderful life today. Get your joy juices flowing today and go do what you came to do. Number two, treat yourself to an early Christmas. So today I want you to buy your divine self a gift. Make a commitment. You're going to buy yourself a gift. It doesn't have to be expensive. It can be. I mean, go to Pinkberry, if that's your joy. Or go to Tiffany's, if that's your joy. Or somewhere in between. Gift yourself today with something fun. What would be fun for you to have today? Today you're going to go do it, and next Sunday I'm going to ask you, what did you get? Number three, take that Vera thought, your self-quiz, that's always asking ourselves. That's the Satan in the Bible. The Satan wasn't evil. The Satan was a worker for God, saying, well, let's see if they really believe this or not. So that little Satan Vera within you, ask yourself, what would happen if I went completely 100%, 100 miles an hour toward my good? What is the worst thing that could happen with God guiding me? Absolutely nothing bad can happen. You begin to discover what your real joy is all about. And number four, trust that God is here as you faithfully go through that new door of new good, new experience, new joy, and to accept the good that you've never, ever considered possible before today. As William James wrote in his Formula for Successful Living, start immediately, do it flamboyantly, no excuses. Close your eyes, breathe into your heart. Let your lungs fill up with this joy, this good, this excitement. If you're not excited about your life, who is? Believe it, have faith that God is here with you, for you, through you. And we do this by beginning, by going into our meditation time with our beautiful song, I Am So Blessed for All That I Have, All That I Am, and All That God Is. Let the joy well up from your heart. Let it overflow into your life, into your body, into your mind. Trust God is at work in you now. Ask you the question I asked earlier. What would you do if you knew it was impossible to fail? It is impossible to fail with God at work. Your good
is unfolding perfectly in you. It might look a little different than you are holding right now, but it's going to be perfect just for you, just for your life, in ways that right now you have no conception of. But your job right now is just to say yes to God. That's all Spirit requires, is your willing, acceptable, joyful heart to move forth in the direction of your good. God cannot do anything without your permission. So silently give God the okay to move into your life that which you've been waiting for. Breathe in. Let go of anxiety. Let go of fear. There's nothing to fear with God at work. Perfect love casts out fear. So let that love energy flow from your heart. Feel it gently flowing into every part of your being through your whole system. Feel that light relax, release, calm, soothe, and bring forth wholeness to you now. With every breath you take, the love of God is flowing perfectly through you now. As you continue to feel the peace, love, joy, and light of God, I invite you to hold this truth silently in your heart. The joy of God floods my mind and body. I am strong and healthy. This is the truth of every child of God. The joy of God floods my mind and body. I am strong and healthy. Breathe that truth in. Let it take hold. Feel it. Accept it. Rejoice in it. We also know the joy of God draws forth like a magnet my abundant good. I am prosperous. This is your truth as a child of God. There is no lack for creations of spirit. We live in an abundant universe, a universe that so loves and supports you all the time. Today we lift our joy up, and we know the joy of God draws forth like a magnet my abundant good. I am prosperous. We also know the joy of God shines a light on my life path. I am guided perfectly, always. There is no doubt, no confusion when we let go and let God do it through us. The joy of God shines a light on my life path. I am guided perfectly, always. Let that take hold. Breathe into the silence of your being and the quiet within. Feel that joy radiating its perfect light, perfect love. Be still and know that God is here. The fullness of God in that one moment of silence reveals itself perfectly. It reveals who and what we are. I am a unique, vibrant, and successful creation of light, love, and joy. And so it is.